I want to thank all of you again for allowing me to be here. I wish my wife was here. I don't do well without my wife. We've traveled for over 30 years, and the times now that I travel without her, I do struggle. So if you see me curled up in the corner, and you'll know that's. It's good to be home, though. I look out here, and so many of you I've known for 30 years. See, Brother George, good to see you. And others that just, I feel very comfortable being here with you. Stephanie, good to see you. I didn't know I was going to see you, but I'm glad you're here. You're a very timely time with your family. And the rest of you that over the years we've had communication with, we've had contact, we've been in some of your homes, you know, so we really appreciate that. I'm not going to take a lot of time today to talk about Gospel Fellowship Association, the mission agency, which I am the executive director. I did put on the table out there some material. If you'd like to stop, pick some of that up, feel free to do so. I didn't bring a lot, but there's some out there that you're welcome to have if you'd like. Travel is just, I got in, figured I had a lot of time to get here yesterday. I didn't even get out of Greenville for a couple hours. The mechanical problems with the plane, we had to deplane the plane and go out, and I had to reschedule another connecting flight from Charlotte, get into the flight in Charlotte, and come to find out that they got on the PA system and said, "Hey, sorry folks, we have..." They overloaded one of the wings with fuel by 2,000 pounds heavier than the other wing. We can't, you know, it'd be hard to fly it like that. So they're going to come out and try to drain some out. I was, what are you going to do? Let it drip out onto the tarmac? What do you do? And they came out, and another 45 minutes go by, and they said, "Oh, folks, I don't know how to tell you this, but they didn't drain it out. They topped it off." So now the plane is unflyable. I'm going, what is this? By this time, people are starting to get a little antsy, and I don't know if a riot was going to start. They were crying for Pete's, something. And so finally, then they came out and filled the other wing to match the one wing so they could balance it out. And I'm a pilot. I'm going, okay, weight and balance calculations. We got a full flight here, and both wings are topped off with fuel. I guess this plane can handle that kind of weight. We'll find out. We made it last night late. I appreciate being picked up by Brother Ken and Lois. Good to meet Lois, and great fellowship as always. Thank you so much. This morning, I want to do some morning and the afternoon. I'll do something a little different. The theme, of course, is for the... Well, it's not a very good... My screen will be up here in a moment. Is... I do all things for the sake of the gospel. Doing all things for the sake of the gospel. You know, we're told to do all things to the glory of God, and rightly so. But Paul also said that glorifying God is doing all things for the gospel. Living our lives in such a way, as we read there in Philippians, at first chapter of Philippians. Paul gave the example of how he lived for the gospel. I'm willing to die for Christ. He's asking us to do the same thing. Here in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 23, we find our verse. And here in 1 Corinthians chapter, 1 Corinthians verse chapters 8 and 9. Chapter 8, by the way, I'm not going to be expositing these. I'm going to leave it for the real preachers. I'm going to give the applications. Today's the applications, believe it or not. I'm going to be talking. It's a little different approach to it, but I want to... We discussed this a little bit, Brother Paul and I discussed the theme and the passage, and I knew you folks probably didn't want to hear the same message preached over and over again just by different preachers. So the challenge was to make it a bit different. So I'm going to give basically the application, and what I'm going to be doing actually is at the latter part of the message, sharing from the words of missionaries of the past, their own testimonies of how they did all things for the sake of the gospel. Then at the end, the last 12 minutes, I'm going to be watching my time here so we can be out of here by 3:30 this evening, this afternoon, to hear from Dr. John Dreisbach. How many of you remember John Dreisbach? I knew I'd see that response. We're going to hear his words as he talks about giving as he and Betty gave their lives to serve Jesus Christ. But look with me here in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, where Paul urges all believers. Like I said, chapter 8 is we're to live our lives not to please ourselves. We're to live our lives not to please our preferences. We live in a generation when people say, well, that's your preference and this is my preference. We all have our preferences. We ought to have rights to have our own preferences. I say, where's that in the Bible? We're to sacrifice our own desires. If our meat offends, what are we supposed to do? Give it up. That's chapter 8. Chapter 9, Paul talks about our own life and how we live our life, our own desires. We put aside all of our personal rights, our desires, for the sake of the gospel. That is the issue, not preferences, not how I can live my life and you can live yours. It's how do we live all of our lives, live it for the sake of the gospel of Jesus Christ. We are to orientate our life to proclaim the gospel and to reflect its power. That's the point. Here, we find Paul giving a pledge. I don't always entitle my messages, but I thought, here's Paul's gospel pledge. This was his approach to the gospel. He is pledging himself to that very same message that rescued him in a path that was destined for hell. And he said, verse 23, I do all things for the sake of the gospel. He was saying, I dedicate my life to go wherever, to do whatever my Lord asks of me, all for the sake of telling others of the saving power and message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. This was Paul's gospel pledge. I do all things for the sake of the gospel. So what I'm going to do, I mentioned I'm going to use the, in a moment I'm just going to break down that verse into some very basic elements to kind of set the stage. And then the rest of the message, we're going to be seeing quotes from missionaries of the past who also took that pledge. And then, of course, we'll be urged to do the same. Just break it up here. The first group of words here, the word I do, that makes reference to a personal commitment. The word do is a verb that affirms action. I do this. I will do something. So it affirms a desire and action on the part of the one who's speaking the word. Then he says, I. When this pronoun is used in conjunction with the word do, it communicates a person's clear, definite, unchanging commitment to said action. I do this. It's a pledge. We have a wedding. Do you take? I'll think about it. I'll have to wait and see what happens. There is an affirmation. I do. There's a pledge. There's a vow that is given. Paul says, here's my vow. I do this. Unbending, unchanging. This controls my desires, my preferences, my actions, my pursuits in life. I do this one thing. You know, I remember as a teenager, I was 16 when I came to Christ. It wasn't long after. I remember my pastor, Blaine Farley, he was one of these evangelistic, he would cup his hand and he would preach to us. I'm one of these old-time, wiry and fiery preachers. The Lord used him. I remember that Sunday evening coming up to with my knees on the floor before and bowing down and saying, "All right, Lord, I do this. I do. I commit myself personally to whatever you want me to do. Here I am." I sometimes wonder if that's where we're lacking sometimes in our church. Do we have a church full of people who have made that gospel pledge? So lacking. "I give my life to you, Lord," was Paul's words. Next section. There's an unrestricted commission. All. This means unlimited, without reservation or exception. Whatever. All. "I do all things without restriction, without question." The word "things" is used to be non-specific or non-descriptive in its element. All things, things. We use that word "things." So it's non-descriptive. It just means everything, whatever, all things. Paul says, "I pledge, I do this, all things, whatever it is. It doesn't matter, whatever the Lord would ask of me, whatever, wherever you ask, I will go and obey, Lord. I will do it." Paul's pledge, his gospel pledge. All things, doesn't matter. I heard a story years ago that you all know the story of Jim Elliot, Nate Saint, the other men that gave their lives in Ecuador. And Nate Saint's son, Stephen, also was a missionary pilot, and he would fly pastors, missionaries from Miami down to South America. And on one flight, there was an old gentleman, an old pastor, who wanted to go down to Ecuador and visit that place where the men gave their lives to reach the Alca people for Christ. While they were flying, this older gentleman, this pastor, said to Stephen Saint, "Well, Stephen, you wouldn't know this, but I actually saw your father die." Stephen said, "No, that was impossible. You couldn't have been there." "No, I was there. I saw the moment that your father gave his life for Christ." "That's impossible," protested Stephen. "No, I'm telling you the truth. I saw your father die." He says, "And it wasn't on that narrow strip of sand called Palm Beach in Ecuador. It was one night during a missions conference at Wheaton College." Back then, Wheaton was something to talk about. "But they had a mission speaker who came and spoke about giving themselves, making that pledge, committing yourself personally to Jesus Christ. I saw your father come down to the altar and bow his knees and give his life to say, 'Lord, I will do whatever you want me to do.' He made that gospel pledge. That's when he died. What happened on the narrow strip of sand in Ecuador was just an outflow of obedience of what he had already done." You see, we're missing this. That moment when we give our lives to serve Jesus Christ. We need another generation of young people who will say, "I will make that pledge." But there seems to be a fear about it. How does this work? How do I raise a family on a missionary support? How do we do this? How do we do that? I mean, whatever excuse. Paul said, "I do all things. It's unrestricted. Whatever you ask me to do." Oh, to have another generation that would make that kind of commitment to Christ. I do all things and then for the supreme cause, for the sake of. The sake, the term the sake really kind of means it's the end purpose or result of doing something. Last night I was a little warm. I got to Perry's and I opened up the window. It felt nice. For the sake of some fresh air, I opened the window. See, it's the result of an action. I do all things for the sake, for the result of something, for the purpose of something. And that is the gospel. The gospel. Wow. You remember when you got saved? I remember I got saved. Both my wife and I come from troubled homes. I raced motorcycles. I was in that culture. I was a part of a gang in my neighborhood. I thought I ran my neighborhood remotely from my own home. I thought I was in control. And I was just headed down a path, and I realized now where that path was so destructive. God rescued me from that. The gospel did that. And I sometimes wonder if our churches, if we've begun to lose the sense and the marvel and the wonder of the gospel and the power of the gospel. Because how long has it been since we've seen in our churches examples of those who've been rescued from the power of sin and of the world and destruction? You get some new converts into a church, begin to see the transformation when that new energy comes in. The need today is for all faithful believers in Jesus Christ to take this pledge. I do all things for the sake of the gospel. I live my life for the sake of the gospel. I make my choices for the sake of the gospel. I use my life, my time, my energies for the sake of the gospel. I wasn't planning on saying this, but I have certain... by the way, Dr. Alan Patterson, who works with me at GFA, Stephanie would know him very well, and probably Brother Bailey also. He and I, we're so different. We're so different. Except for things that really matter. Our feet hit the ground in the same spot. But see, he likes gardening and golf. I can't stand gardening and golf. I like motorcycling and guns. Okay, we're so different. Except things that really matter. You know what? We need to do whatever we do for the gospel. I do. I'm involved in competition, pistol competitions. And I've had opportunities to have in my kitchen, in my kitchen table, the former chief counsel, legal counsel to the Attorney General of the state of South Carolina, who also is a competitive shooter, giving him the gospel. I can take name after name of name, using my life for the gospel of Jesus Christ. Don't use it for myself. So much we have, we have conditioned ourselves to have our hobbies for what? Well, I need some time to do what I like to do. When have we tried to use that for the gospel? Do all things for the gospel. Begin to orientate our lives in that direction. So we're always looking at ourselves. This passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9, really the emphasis is this. I do all things. Put aside my desires, my thoughts, my interests for the sake of the gospel. The rest of this morning I'm going to share with you, in their own words, six missionaries of the past who pledged to use their lives for the sake of the gospel. Now, I had about 10 more in all preparedness, but I just whittled it down to six. but it makes the point. And I hope it will be an example to us. Let's try to compare our lives to their lives, what they said about this. Is this our spirit about the gospel? Start first with William Carey, a familiar name in missions. He was a young man, trusted Christ as a young man, a poor little village there in England. Came to Christ, yielded his life to serve Christ, entered the ministry, and really began with a fresh zeal coming into the ministry and the relationship of the other churches. And he began to tell them, listen, we need to reach around the world with the gospel of Jesus Christ. And there was just kind of an apathy that he had to contend with. But he continued, and one time he wrote this. He says, multitudes sit at ease at home in England and give no concern for the greater part of their fellow sinners who to this day are lost in ignorance and in idolatry. We're so worried about our own things, our own lives, but we forget that around the world there are many people who have never heard about Jesus Christ. He was trying to awaken his own generation. And I find in our generation, we too need a fresh awakening to this. They needed to be stirred back in the 1700s. So do we. Become very comfortable. We're more worried about ourselves, our country, our economy, our politics, our this, our that, our sports team. We worry about so many other things. And it clouds out of our mind the things that we really need to be focusing on, that which is eternally binding. In 1792, William Carey organized a mission society. We call mission societies back then, mission boards. I like to call mission service agencies. And then within a year, Carey, along with John Thomas and Carey's family, which included three boys, another child that was on the way, were on a ship for India. He spent the 40 years, and actually 41 years, and during that time there were some 700 converts, multiple translations of scriptures into the dialects, a man who had a tremendous impact on world evangelism, world missions. In fact, he's called the father of modern missions. It was his enthusiasm that sparked a flame again in England to begin sending forth missionaries around the world. Of the likes were Adoniram Judson, Hudson Taylor, David Livingston, and thousands of others. His pledge was, I do all things for the sake of the gospel. Here's a couple quotes. Oh, what is there in this world worth living for but the presence and service of God? I feel a burning desire that all the world may know this God and serve Him. I've never yet repented of any sacrifice that I've made for the gospel. The worth of souls, the pleasure of the work itself, and above all, the increase of the Redeemer's kingdom are with me motive sufficient and more than sufficient to determine me to die in the work that I have undertaken. So I have never yet repented of any sacrifice that I've made for the gospel. I do all things for the gospel. The increase of the Redeemer's kingdom are without motive sufficient and more than sufficient to determine me to die in the work that I've undertaken. There's nothing greater. He's saying there's nothing greater this side of heaven than knowing, serving, and telling others of Jesus Christ. There's nothing better, my friends, this side of heaven than knowing, serving, and telling others of Jesus Christ. Next, we have Emily Judson. Emily Chubbuck Judson. She was Anne Judson's third wife. I've also one his third wife. The first two died on the mission field. What, were they standing in line? What was this? His third one. I mean, let me go next. I just find myself, and Emily here, she said, well, the first two died. Do I really want to do this? Do I want to be now the third one in the line of, I don't know, maybe my mind ought not go there, but I find myself wondering. But it didn't matter. After his first wife died, the second one says, I want to go. She died, the third one, I want to go. And this is what she said upon meeting National Christians when she arrived in Burma. So these are some of the Christians of Burma. Men born in idolatry, redeemed and marked for his crown in glory. What sublime thing to be a missionary. Men born in idolatry, redeemed and marked for his crown of glory. What supreme thing to be a missionary. I do all things for the sake of the gospel. There's nothing better this side of heaven than knowing and serving and giving your life to serve Jesus Christ. William Borden came from a wealthy family. His father made all of his money in silver mining out west. It was R.A. Torrey that he came to Christ through R.A. Torrey's preaching. And through R.A. Torrey's preaching, he made the pledge, I will do all things for the sake of the gospel. Prepared himself to go to the field. He wanted to work with Muslims in northwest China. While studying Arabic in Cairo, he contracted cerebral meningitis and died a few weeks later. He was 25. Before he died, he said this, no reserve, no regrets, no retreat. There's nothing better than knowing and serving and telling others about Jesus Christ. Nothing better. I will give my life to this, whether it be by life or by death, what Paul said in the first chapter of Philippians. Nate Saint, people who do not know the Lord ask why in the world we would waste our lives as missionaries. They forget that they too are expending their lives. And when the bubble has burst, they will have nothing of eternal significance to show for the years they have wasted. Jim Elliot, this is a picture taken right from his journal. We've all heard this. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. There's nothing better than knowing and serving and telling others about Jesus Christ. Jim Elliot made the pledge, I do all things for the sake of the gospel. Now here's a couple. The Dreisbachs, John and Betty Dreisbach. Now many of you, how many of you remember John and Betty, right? Yeah, I've already asked that. And yeah. They said, as long as I have voice, I want to proclaim and exalt the lovely name of Jesus, particularly to those who have never had a clear presentation of the gospel. I do all things for the sake of the gospel. You see how that runs through all of them. They may not have said those exact words, but we find that their action, they made that action. They gave themselves to serve Jesus Christ. Now what I'm going to do, I'm going to take the next 12-15 minutes, and we're just going to hear from Dr. Dreisbach in his own words. He's with the Lord, but I've showed this in another place, and I like because it gives me a chance to minister, tag team with my friend John Dreisbach. I feel like as I sit down and listen to him speak, he's up there speaking, and we're doing it together. I love the man. But here's a couple who said, I do all things for the sake of the gospel. There's a couple of sections here. I'll walk us through that at each one of them. His beginning years, we'll find out about how they met and their marriage, a little bit about their ministry. And then at the end, he'll actually give us a little challenge. All right? let me get this started. Formative years of John Dreisbach.
I was privileged to be born into a very godly, missionary-minded family. I was the youngest of three children. My older brother, who was 15 years my senior, had felt called to be a medical missionary to Africa and had completed his pre-medical training and had been accepted into medical school for the fall semester. My father was a farmer, and among other things, he had a large cherry orchard. One late August, he and my older brother, with a horse-drawn sprayer, were spraying the fruit trees when a thunderstorm came up, and they pulled the sprayer and the team of horses up in front of a little shed where they prepared the fruit for market. And apparently they were standing just inside the door. It was one of those barn doors that ran on a trolley. It was a single bolt of lightning that struck a tree beside the shed, apparently ran down the iron trolley, killed both my father and brother, and jumped across and killed one of the horses. I was 4 years old, and from that day on, I felt that my brother's mantle had fallen upon my shoulder, and I've never had any other purpose in life than to do what he could not, that of being a medical missionary. The church that I grew up in was a country church, and it was a church where the Bible was preached, believed, taught, lived. And it was in that little country church that I came to faith in Jesus Christ as a 12-year-old lad. Throughout my early youth, I was fed a steady diet of missionary biographies. And I thrilled to the fact that my mother acquainted me with some of the great men and women of past generations and into the present time who were serving the Lord faithfully, many of them in very difficult places. As a child, I think I knew Livingston and Mary Slessor better than I knew my next door neighbor, because I grew up knowing these people as if they were intimate friends, and in a sense, they were.
I praise God for my own home. How I rejoice that I had the privilege, the high privilege, of being in a home where Christ was exalted, where missions were held up as the highest calling that one could aspire to. My own father had been killed when I was four, but my widowed mother carried on the tradition in that home, and I praise God for it. How we need to be mindful of the tremendous influence that we can have on our children.
Okay, we're going to move on now to courtship and marriage. I want you to see, and for our teenagers here and our children, this began young. This began when he was a young boy. And I think it's time that some of our younger generation begin, when they're young, to make this pledge for the gospel. Here we're going to listen to this is my favorite part. This has got some humor here that's good to share, but you can see a little bit about the man and his wife, okay?
I was in medical school at Ohio State University. A collegiate Bible study had been started on that large secular campus, and I had become quite active in it. My wife had gone to a community college in West Virginia, her home, and transferred her last year to Ohio State to complete her undergraduate studies in chemistry and physics and education. We had posters scattered around the campus advertising this Bible study. Her first night at Ohio State, when there was to be a meeting, she came out I came into the service just a wee bit late and had to sit at the very back of the room. I had prayed all my young adult life that God would give me a mate who had been called to missions prior to our meeting. I did not want my call to influence my mate's call. And so that night, my wife-to-be was introduced, and she gave a very clear, beautiful testimony of her salvation and of her call to be a missionary to Africa. Well, that struck home to me. And I wanted to meet that young lady because all I had seen was the back of her head at that time. After the service was over, I made a point of getting to know this young lady. And it was, I guess you would say, love at first sight. From that time on, it was always not what I was going to do or what she was going to do, but what we were going to do. The Lord gave me a wonderful mate. I took my internship at Gorgas Hospital in the Canal Zone. She had graduated already from Ohio State and had gone on to take some graduate work and was at the time in nurses training. The hospital had a rule that the interns could not marry during the time that they were having that year of training. After my internship, I was asked if I would be interim superintendent of the American Leprosarium in the Canal Zone, which I was glad to do, for I wanted as much experience in treating that disease as I could have before going to Africa. And it also gave me the freedom to invite my dear Betty come down from New Orleans to be married. We were married in the First Baptist Church in Balboa Heights, Canal Zone. It was in the evening service, and the pastor, as was his custom, had a fine evangelistic meeting. And then at the close of the service, we had a very simple wedding. Both of us were relatively strangers to the Canal Zone and had no close friends. So there was no best man, there was no bridesmaid. We didn't have any fancy clothes. I only had one suit to my name at that time, and that's the suit I wore. She wore a dress that her sister had loaned to her, a suit. And so nothing very fancy, but a beautiful service. I was going to take her back to the leprosarium. The only vehicle that I had available for my own use was the leprosarium ambulance. So I took my bride home in the leprosarium ambulance. But that night, the patients in the leprosarium had a homemade steel band. Our house was built up on stilts, and as soon as we got back, they came up under our house with that steel band and serenaded us all night long. Now, that was not exactly what I was looking forward to, but I went out on the veranda and threw candy down, and that only encouraged them. I threw some money down, and that was a challenge to them to keep on. They serenaded us till dawn. Finally, worried, went back to their quarters, but that was our wedding night.
A young couple aspiring to serve Christ and making their path, choosing their way, him going down to Panama Canal, working there. By the way, the pictures here of the church, I took those pictures. I've been down there many times. That church is still there. Sunday night, after the invitation, come forward, had the wedding, got in the ambulance and went home. I mean, just, I do all things for the sake of the gospel. That they were so laser focused on serving Christ this way, that was most important to them. Next, 50 years of serving together in John with John and Betty. They spent 35 years in Africa. They led short team missions for many years to Haiti, Philippines, Micronesia, and 25 other countries they went to with students from Bob Jones, head up the medical missions program for GFA, 1990 until their death in 2009, his death in 2009, age of 87. He served as an administrative director of GFA, working alongside of me. This picture here, many of you recognize from the movie Beyond the Night, a film produced by Unusual Films, where it depicts their ministry down there. He was a man who was intent on giving the gospel of Christ. If I had time, I could tell you some stories, of just incredible stories, of going out in the middle of the desert, the Sahara Desert in Africa, and finding nomadic tribes men out there, and seeing one man on, and just going and giving him the gospel. I can't take the time to tell you. It's just wonderful. All they wanted to do was tell people about Jesus Christ. I do all things for the sake of the gospel would be his pledge. Now here, just a few moments, be able to talk about his remaining years. He says, Brother Batory, can I go to Africa? I want to go back to Africa. He says, I don't work in Greenville, Ray. This doesn't fit me. I said, okay, where do you want to go? He said, well, I've been studying Google Maps. I said, uh-oh. And the problem was showing him how to use Google Maps, because then he found some islands in the middle of Lake Chad. Some little dots. He said, I like to go there. There's probably not much of the gospel being done there. I want to go someplace where the gospel is not. He's in his 80s. Okay, well, we make this happen. I found a fellow who had been a Marine, who knew how to dig a latrine, okay? How to go set up camp in the middle of some little islands. He went with Dr. Dreisbach twice. That was for two trips he went out there. And we'll talk a little bit about that, show that in a moment here. But he, after that second, he wanted to go a third time. I said, Dr. Dreisbach, no. No. It was taking two other missionary families almost full time to keep him going out there, supplying him. I says, and your health. We had a contingency plan all drawn up with the family that if he died out there, what do we do? Joe, the Marine, I said, dig a hole, bury him. As soon as we can come out there, we'll come out. But that's what you do. Okay. But the third time, I said, no, Dr. Rice, you can't go. He's having some real health issues on dialysis. Dr. Rice, how can you go out? No. I said, tell you what, why don't you do this? Why don't you record in Hausa, the Hausa language, a evangelistic group of Bible studies and messages through the book of John. He said, I'd love to do that. I'd love to do that. I said, okay. All right, you cannot go to heaven until you get that project done. He says, oh, my boss won't let me go to Africa. Now he won't let me go to heaven. Tell the relationship we had. This tells about his ministry, and he will have some closing comments. But again, look at a man. And this is what the world is crying for today. People who will say, I do all things for the sake of the gospel. Are we willing to take that pledge? Last part here.
We became introduced to these island people that were in the part of Lake Chad that's governed by Cameroon. And we had the desire to take the gospel of Jesus Christ to them. We would take a trip to one of the major islands, the seat of government in that area. We saw their people. Masses of people, it seemed like. One little island, 3,000 adults, give or take, and about 6 million children. That's an exaggeration, but people, almost 100% Muslim, who had never been evangelized. On the second visit, I was able to talk to the governor of that area, and ask if I could come and live on one of these islands. And you know who I am. I'm a Christian. I'm a missionary. I will be sharing my faith. And he said, no problem. Come ahead. So with that in view, in the spring of 2007, I began to make definite plans to go and live on one of the islands and be able to preach Jesus Christ to these dear, neglected people. We were at the end of the road. Zane and his truck brought our equipment out, and then we had to hire a boat to carry us out to our island. All of our kit and caboodle in the boat, and we were pulled for several hours out to the little island of Djibouniba. This is our house that we lived in for 5 months. It's difficult to see the house itself because of the heavy foliage of the trees that surround it. That was a blessing because it hid us from the rest of the people and allowed people to slip in and out who might have been fearful of coming to our place. We found that by far the best way to reach out to these people was on a one-to-one basis. And when they would slip into our compound, like this man, and sat down with me with open Bible, and I gave him a copy of a House of Bible, and shared the Word of God with him. On occasion, and frequently really, more than one would come. And toward the end of our stay, we had a fair group that would come even for a Sunday service. And they became bolder and did not wait until dusk, but in the daytime would be there for a Bible study. A number of these men made profession of faith while we were there. One day, I had been taking a little siesta and came out, and there were about six little kids sitting in a row right outside my door. Do you want something? Can I help you? I said, we'd like to have a story. All right, I'll give you a story. That was the beginning of our children's ministry. Almost every day, there'd be a group of children, and I would tell them a Bible story, and depending upon their ages and comprehension, I would preach Jesus Christ and share the gospel with them. I close with Isaiah 42, verse 4b, and the isles shall wait for his law. They're waiting. They're still waiting. Who will teach us now, they ask. And I ask, who will?
I told you I'd asked Dr. Dreisbach to not check out until he finished this project. We could record on video this evangelistic Bible study through the book of John, and he was very excited about it. The day came to record the first session, and we went to his apartment. I fixed up a background, it looked like a little grass mat and stuff, and so it looked more of a cultural type background. And we recorded the first day, and that was on a Friday. I remember being there in his apartment, and I was so excited. I couldn't wait. We're going to send these CDs over there, and this can be used, and this can be spread around all there. And we finished, and the fellow who was making the video recording, it had a digital tape in it, and he, when he was done, he opened up the machine, and the tape went... Okay, well, this made a good trial run. We'll come back on Monday. We'll continue this on Monday. We're going to do all that next week as he had strength. That was it. Saturday, I received the call. He checked out. But I realized, Lord, why? Why? Why would you do this? But it was like the Lord said, listen, what I need is not for CDs to send over there. I need more boots on the ground. I need another generation who will take that gospel pledge and say, I will do all things for the sake of the gospel. Where is that new generation? That's what is needed. For someone else to step and say, okay, I'll do this. I'll go. I will, like Nate Saint, go to that altar and say, okay, I'm going to die right here. I'm going to give myself. You can do it in your seat. You can do it at home. But you give your life to serve Jesus Christ. This afternoon, I'm going to tell another story. But of another man who's still living, but who also made that pledge years ago. He was in his 40s, late 30s, early 40s. Gave up his job and went to the field. I'm going to tell you about that story and what God did. Let's pray. Father, I pray that you'll use this and that all of us will search our hearts. Are we willing to pledge ourselves to the gospel? That message that was so effectual in saving us and giving us a transform. Why would we be so selfish as to keep it to ourselves? Well, may you give us another generation and make that pledge and be willing to go. In Jesus' name, amen. Brother King.